All of us here at the PWO Place to Be Nation were saddened to hear of the passing of Adam Cech after a valiant fight against cancer. Adam had been a member of our little community for some time, and he will be missed. He leaves behind a loving wife and two young sons, and our love and condolences go out to them and all of his family and friends. During his battle, Adam had said that listening to the podcasts on the feed helped him get through some of those tough times during his fight. So we'd like to ask everyone out there to help lend a hand to his family. A GoFundMe page has been established for future educational expenses for his boys and to fulfill his plans for the boys to see a Packers game at Lambeau Field. Whatever you can donate will be greatly appreciated and will be put towards helping this young family navigate a future without Adam. Just head over to GoFundMe.com and put in Adam's Pack - helping Adam's family in the search engine, and please give what you can. Thank you.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
From Space City, USA, Paul Bosch presents Wrestling Spectacular, matching the world's top wrestlers in fierce competition.
Welcome to This Week in Wrestling, NWA On Demand. I am Pete, I'm joined by Johnny, and we're all kicking it out in the new year. So Johnny, how's the new year treating you so far?
Oh,
2 days into it.
Yeah, so far so good. I chose to have a stay-at-home house to myself New Year's, which when you live in a large family, sometimes it's just like, we're going to a party at a place with friends. But it's going to be super claustrophobic and lots of little kids. I was like, you know what?
Pass.
Well, no, I love, and there's great people. I go to the parties frequently. But I'm like, you know what? Exactly. Pass. I am going to take advantage of having the entire blaring the dead in the living room, mind you, while listening to podcasts on my headphones. You know why? Because I can.
There you go.
And then that was my happy new year to me. And that's... That, along with loving the fact that you get socks for Christmas, is a sign you're officially fucking old.
Yeah, no, I hear you, man. I ordered me a Kindle, for crying out loud, for a Christmas present for myself. Someone goes, why do you need a Kindle for? Well, I do read, and I like it's better. It's easier than reading on my iPhone, and I don't like having to buy books that clutter up the place, you know? I already have enough DVDs that clutter up the place. I don't need books and that ilk when I can have a Kindle, which is, you know, years behind the times. But I didn't do much either on New Year's. I had a friend who's in town, and he's like, man, you come to go downtown with us? I'm like, no fucking way I'm going downtown on New Year's. I haven't gone downtown on New Year's in years. It was one thing when I was going down to the bars frequently and people recognized me, like as in doorman, so I didn't have to wait in line. But now that I haven't been out in years downtown on a regular basis, I did not feel like waiting in line and paying a cover to go into a fucking club.
That's sort of my thing too. Anyone, when I worked in the nightclub, when I was worked at the strip club for 7 years, I knew that if anything, fuck it, I'll just go there.
Yeah.
You know, not because I need to see titties or nothing, because I work there and I can get discount drinks, front pay cover, and hang out with a bunch of friends who, besides the dudes who work there, but also hang out and shoot pool with a bunch of half naked hot chicks who just happen to be my buddies.
Right.
You know, but you know what? Nobody works there anymore. You worked there and I worked there, so I'm not going there.
Yeah, I know. I was joking with somebody since we dropped the WWE show that now I actually have time to go out and have beers. And I actually went out with some drinks, and the bartender was so excited to see me. Oh, I haven't seen you in months. You know, and you realize, Jesus Christ, I've been podcasting too much.
Like, don't you know I have a mortgage?
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's just cool. I only had like 4 beers, but she was cool enough, caught me 2 of them. So she, of course, got a nice tip and stuff. So that's how I roll, Betty.
Although I did at one point in an empty garage at 2 in the morning, was drunkenly blaring out Les Mis. So there was definitely entertainment to be had.
There you go. There we go, man. All right, man, let's start it off. Well, the first thing, I was looking on my Kindle, and for some reason it hadn't shown up on my iPhone in years, but it showed up on my Kindle was this Houston wrestling book I had. And so I was just glancing through it. I'm like, I wonder if there's anything we've covered. And there really is a lot of stuff, and I'll start sharing it more on the podcast. But one of the things was the snake story. And what the deal was, which if you guys haven't heard this before, on one of the last, it was either the last episode or the episode before, there was a promo by the Sheik and Gary Hart with Paul Bosch, and there was a snake. And
yeah, he was wearing, Paul Bosch had the Sheik wear a snake, and it was in exchange for ad time for the exotic pet shop that provided the snake.
Right. So what the backstory is the Sheik actually had a boa in Detroit and would do promos with the damn snake there. And they wouldn't let him fly with the snake, obviously, because of the boa constrictor, right? So the first time they were there, there was no snake, and they were kind of, the crowd just was, I don't know, he felt like the crowd was kind of disappointed. So the next time, they go, and they said, well, I'm going to have you a snake. I can't have you without the snake. And so he went and found a big wrestling fan who happened to own this, like, exotic pet store, and gave him free tickets. And they gave him the snake for free in exchange for free tickets and a plug. And that's the whole entire...
Holy dude. When we first described that, we were talking about that Paul Bosch is a fucking businessman. And we were just positing theories as to what the deal might be. The fact that that's the deal, that it was as well as a deal with a local business, because we know from everything you've told me, Paul Bosch was the face of local businesses in that town. That it was actually, look, you're supposed to have a fucking snake. I'm going to figure out a way to get him a snake and not have to pay for it.
Yeah.
And that's fucking genius. And it's still funny that the fact that he was just like, "This, I'm not used to this snake," and didn't want it on him. But the fact that that's how he finagled that deal, oh, God. Each week, I am more and more on the Paul Bosch bandwagon of just, I love him. Yeah. That's amazing.
And the other backstory part of it is the Sheik was real nervous about this snake because he owned the other one. And so he was the one who was in charge. Okay. He made sure it got fed because he asked the owner, he goes, when's the last time this got fed? And they go, well, it was fed yesterday. And I guess when you wrap a boa constrictor around you, if it hasn't been fed, it gets hungry and will start to ravel around you and suffocate you.
Is that what it's doing?
Yeah. So he wanted to make sure the damn snake wasn't going to turn on him in the middle of this and start to attempt to kill him. And so he wanted to make sure that it was I mean, this is just absurd, only in wrestling. Wanted to make sure he got fed and stuff because he didn't feel comfortable going out without knowing that the
But that's what were we saying? What were we saying? It was obvious the Sheik was not happy with that snake.
Yep.
And Gary Hart was not either. And oh my God, and the fact that that's the here on this week in NWA Classics on Demand, we get to the bottom of the real stories that are out there.
Yep.
I was
laughing my ass off reading these things. I was like, holy moly.
It's amazing that that was in it.
Yep, because it was a big, big memory for him. The guy wrote it was Peter Burkholz, who was Paul Bosch's lieutenant. It was his number two guy. We haven't seen a whole lot of him here on the Houston footage, but when I'm growing up, I saw Peter Burkholz all over the television and stuff, and we'll probably see him, I'm sure, eventually some more of him. And you could totally tell that the Sheik did not want anything to do with this snake, and obviously he's been around plenty of his own snakes, but you know what? It's different when you know, it's one thing, we fed him, but did you really feed him, you know?
Sure.
I just loved it. But hey, switching off from snakes and the Sheik, another hardcore legend. This was a lot of Abby they gave us in promos and stuff, and him and J.J. Dillon, I thought They were I thought these were absolutely riveting, and actually made me remember why I'm terrified of Abdullah the Butcher. And here, these things were so perfect and were produced really so creepily. It made you really It made me terrified of Abby all over again. This made me realize how special he is, and actually got me back to remembering Abby like when I was a kid, because these things were absolutely incredible. Like, let's look at the first one, which was, let's look at his first squash match, which is Abby versus Bill Williams. I mean, what a perfect way to get the guy over in the territory. Abby comes out and pretty much just kicks the living shit out of this jobber for maybe about a minute and a half, and does it in a real vicious and an aggressive way, and the jobber pays the price. Abby goes over. I mean, did he not come across as, like, the most violent human being in this squash?
Hey, you know, it's funny. I must have missed this Bill Williams one, because I just watched what I saw it come up, so I missed the Bill Williams one, okay. I guess.
All right.
But what I did see, and I'm sure it was brutal, you know, because this is all about the brutality of Abdullah the Butcher and JJ.
Okay, so let's go into that one. And then you got the Abby with JJ, with Abby's back to the camera the whole entire time, right?
Yeah.
Was that not just mesmerizing television?
Yeah, you know what is the best? Is that he's got a billboard behind him. And if you really think about it, that's a precursor
to
those days when guys would be cutting promos, like saying WWF, and behind them was their logo.
Oh, yeah,
And shit like that. So they didn't have that in this day and age. But behind Abby is a logo that says, in an arc, says, "The Madman from Sudan," and then across it, "Abdullah the Butcher," and then something underneath it that you couldn't make out. And it was red, white, and blue, which made it even more, like, stand out. And Abby's just got his back to the fucking camera the whole time while JJ is delivering this, and this, because he's like doing we're on our way to your territory, Amarillo, from wherever they were cutting this. And it was like, if you were in the Amarillo territory saying this is on your fucking TV, you're just like, Jesus Christ, what the fuck is this? Who is this? Even if you knew about the guy, you'd be like, oh, holy shit, and this is insane, because the presentation was unlike anything of its day.
And JJ was incredible here.
JJ is insane here. Yeah. He's so good. Hey, when I speak of insane, it's because how he ends, and we'll see this.
Yes.
Because he's talking about, people of Amarillo, you know, you may not like me, but you know I am not a liar. And when I say I'm bringing to you the greatest sports attraction in the world, and da 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 da, but he ends with, he goes ballistic. He's calm right up to, "Remember the name, Abdullah the Butcher, the Butcher, the Butcher." And it's insane. But if you didn't know who he was and you're a kid watching the TV, that is scary what he did. And you'll never forget hearing him say it that way.
Yep.
It's fantastic. Fantastic.
Yeah, I was absolutely mesmerized by JJ here. Because, you know, most of the JJ I've seen is JJ as member of the Four Horsemen. Mm-hmm. And then maybe later on as WCW stooge.
I remember him as, you know, the guy who managed my first JJ was, he was like when I first started watching Crockett and stuff, I thought he was like the lowest of the low of the managers
with the long riders.
Yeah, because he was like, as a kid, I'm like, okay, he's got the fake Ric Flair and the two cowboys.
Yeah.
Yeah, this guy's, he's a joke, you know, and I didn't know anything about his history. That's just all I knew. But, but he's got, he's blonde, he's got his fucking cigar and a mustache. A big blonde mustache.
The big pork chop sideburns.
Huge pork chop sideburns. And he's fucking great.
Yep.
He's so good. I mean, I think we might have another bit of NWA Classics of Revelations on our hands with let's get some more of this manager JJ stuff. And because everyone goes, well, you know, he wasn't really that great as the manager of the Horsemen. You know, they could all talk. You know, JJ just made a few points here and there. You know, and he was good, but, you know, people go, eh. Yeah, let's get some more of this.
Yeah, because
Jesus
Christ. Do you remember the spot he did? I don't know if you watched it with me, but we watched a match with him managing. I thought it was Patera, and it was not a very good match, but he saved it by taking this bump at the end where he spits out the.
Oh, dude, of course that was me.
Yeah. Man,
dude. We marveled at that. Like, you can do, like, he did a 650 Phoenix splash into an amazing submission. I don't give a fuck. J.J. Dillon just shot a cigar 20 feet up in the air after a fucking punch.
Yep.
That's fucking art.
Yep. That was incredible. And, yeah, he's really
amazing.
I mean, he made my, when we did our top four managers of all time, our Mount Rushmore for Titans, he was on my list. Because I've seen that, because I really enjoyed his Florida stuff, because he was kind of a lot like this here in Florida. But you also got to remember, he broke in Amarillo, and so he had a lot of history there. And so him coming back and bringing Abdullah to wreck the Amarillo territory, that had a lot of cachet, because he used to feud back there with the Funks.
Oh, right, and he makes mention of that in some of the future stuff we're going to talk about right now. You know, it's clear that these people know who he is.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then this after the promo, it transitions into a match in Japan, which was actually part of the Champions Carnival, and from 1978, and he wrestles Kim Duke in maybe a 6 or 7 minute bloody ass brawl all over the arena. And it was an awesome match. And after seeing this promo and then seeing this freaking vampire mask match, and Abdullah could go here. This wasn't 1992 Abdullah, where he was still scary. But here, man, he could go. Like, I remember Dave Meltzer said, Abdullah the Butcher was probably the greatest wrestler ever for the first 3 minutes. And you got that vibe here, because he was cutting a pretty frantic pace. These guys are punching the shit out of each other. Those headbutts that Kim Duke were throwing was nasty. And they're both double bloody.
Kim Ill.
Yeah, well, his real name is Kim Duke. They called him something else. JJ called him something else for some fucked up reason.
I wrote down Kim Ill because that's what he said.
Yeah, but his real name was Kim Duke. Kim Duck, D-U-K. And, I mean, they were all over the place. They were hard shots, and it totally got Abdullah over as a madman after watching that match, too. What do you think of the match?
Oh, it started, and I love Abdullah matches more than most, even big, slow plotting. So when I see young Abdullah, and that's right, that first couple of minutes, you're like, Jesus, he's fucking great. And but that vacant look, never, even back then, he still had that vacant look,
yep.
Which is so awesome. And he gets to bleeding right away. And Kim Duke then was the guy who I started getting really interested in, because I don't watch Japanese wrestling much at all. And obviously he's old, and they say, no, JJ's doing commentary on this, which is fantastic, because his whole thing is about, you're going to see something devastating, and you see a pretty even fight.
Yeah.
Which is funny, because he's such how the devastating Abdullah the Butcher, look what he's doing to this man, who's turning it right around and fucking up Abdullah as well, with a constant barrage of nothing but headbutts.
Yep.
And it's one of those things, when you watch something where someone just does the same shit over and over again, and at first it's amusing, and then you're bored with it, and then it becomes sublime because it doesn't fucking stop. And that was fucking Kim Duke's fucking headbutt offense in this. By the end, I was like, that motherfucker just throws headbutts, and it's awesome.
Yep.
Because he's an old guy. It's all he's got left. Which then leads to the funniest line. from JJ on commentary.
Yeah, yeah, the coolest part was JJ is doing it, and when he first, if you watch this originally, it's in Japanese, but what they do, they totally do it where JJ's doing, I don't want to say he's doing play-by-play, but he's just interviewing, cutting a promo pretty much over the footage.
No, he's doing a propaganda job. He's doing a propaganda job on this over this footage.
Yeah, and it's awesome. Totally awesome.
It's amazing. But this is my favorite one of all of it, is he's putting over. I mean, he's doing that old school thing of no matter what you do, you put over the opponent guy, you know? And he has known, he keeps saying Kimmel, for his amazingly hard head. He's got an unbelievably hard head. That's why he's been nicknamed Hardhead.
Yeah.
My ass off. I'm like, that's all you could come up with. You just said... he's got a hard head. He's known. That's why they call. Like, who was in charge of the nickname department that day? Because they obviously didn't give a fuck. And they're like, "What's your name? What's your thing? I got a hard head. You're hard head.
Yeah.
Okay. That's it." I laughed my ass off.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
But and then they're both fucking bleeding, and then they're brawling through the fucking stands. It's bonkers, and it's like, is it anything I haven't seen before? People brawling through the stands and all bloody? No, but there's something about seeing it in its time frame, and when you're looking, when you have that many cameras on the people in the crowd, you also get a sense of the fashion at the time, and this is old.
Yeah.
So I'm watching, you know, for anyone who thinks this shit started in the 90s or started wherever, you know, this kind of crazy ass brawling in the crowd shit, it's been around forever.
Yeah, okay? This is 1978 right here we're watching.
Yeah, it's been around forever in all territories, by the way. Some just did it more than others. Some didn't. New York didn't do that, but they did. You know, again, it's you haven't invented anything. This is that, and it's so brutal. It's so when Abdullah's just he hits the fucking ref and knocks him down. He's knocking the quote unquote young boys down.
Yep.
All the young boys who look like just because it's the '70s, they all have mustaches and sideburns, so nobody actually looks young. I loved this, and I especially love the fact that the commentary was JJ.
Yes, I love that too. Yeah.
Yeah, doing a hype job.
Yep.
Abdullah. Look at what he's doing to this man, this Oriental warrior.
Yeah.
What was he going to do to you, weak Americans? Or just,
it really was. And then,
he says, and now he's about to invade the United States. And then he just lists cities in Texas. Now, I know that's how you people in Texas think, that you're the whole United States. It's nice to see it fucking confirmed in a JJ promo. He's about to invade the whole United States. Dallas, Houston, Amarillo, San Antonio, Austin. Okay. Loved it.
Yeah,
that was so good.
And I loved how I thought it was in this one where they were teasing some of the names who Abdullah wanted. And I'm like, and one of the guys they mentioned was Jose Lothario. I'm like, okay.
Was that this one? I thought that was the other.
Maybe it's the next one then. Okay, we'll get to that one then. I'll save it for then. But yeah, I thought this thing was incredible. And then, of course, the crowd running away from Abby in the brawl is just epic. And God, it made me fall back in love with why the character was a young kid, and why I was in love with the character of Abdullah the Butcher being in love with, I mean, being terrified of, but here, just it's like, oh yes, it's like this is what you miss. You don't, you know, if you're just watching an Abdullah match out of context, it just doesn't resonate. But freak, you throw these little things in before he comes into the territory. That's why he's a money guy. I mean, could you keep Abdullah around for 2 years? No. He needed to be in a program for maybe 4 to 6 months. You get in and out, make the money, because, like Gary Hart would always say, with that fork and whatever, you know, you can only do that for so much where people got bored of it, sick of it. But, man, if you booked him right, man, he could make you money and money and money. He made... I think him and Dynamite Kid are considered Stu Hart's number one and two draws of all time. I know we do shitload of money in Puerto Rico and Japan, Texas. He was a huge, big-time draw. Him and Bruiser Brody had epic matches. I mean, and here, I probably haven't watched a vignette like these about Abby in years, and it really put it back into context, the monster, why he was like one of my all-time scariest wrestlers of all time.
And like you say, it's scary. To be scary, you can't be there every week.
Nope.
You can't be around long to be scary, or else you're not scary. I don't care how scary of a character you are. If you're right, Dracula's not scary if he's the monsters and shit.
Yeah.
Halloween, it's scary. You know, that's the thinking. It's, as we saw in WCW, maybe sometimes, guys under contract, and now we have to use them every week and figure out things to do. It's hard to make them scary anymore.
Yep.
You know, it's got to be that way. And, I was just about to go back to another point, but I forgot it. But anyway, yeah, it's I don't know. I know what I wanted to get to. I wanted to get to it now. It was the moment I stopped becoming afraid of Abdullah the Butcher. And I'd only seen, I think, maybe the Carlos Colon match from Starrcade on that tape. Uh-huh. And no, I don't even think I'd seen it by then. I think I knew him purely by reputation in the magazines. And maybe one promo on Worldwide. And I was like, this guy's scary. Because every picture was he's covered in blood.
Yeah. You know?
And it was from a magazine. And it was a black and white shot of Abdullah. I don't remember what the story was about. It was definitely an aftermag. It was like Inside Wrestling. In fact, I remember what issue it was. It was the Inside Wrestling that covered WrestleMania. That's how much they tried to shit on WrestleMania 1. They didn't cover it in PWI. It was covered in Inside Wrestling. yeah. Oh, that's where they covered it. And it was like failure or flop. there's a thing about Abby, and I would just devour those magazines back then, just look at every detail of these pictures. And then I looked on his gear, his big red pants, and I saw that stenciled on the hip, like you would if you're going to put your name on something so it doesn't get lost.
Yeah.
A.Butcher. As if his name was actually Abdullah Butcher of Butchers. The Butchers, they're a wonderful family. Their kid Abby's a little off. He's going to make a success of himself. Oh, we invited the Butchers. And I laughed. I was like 15. I laughed so hard because I was like, that is such a minute detail that someone with a sense of humor did.
Yeah.
That had to be him. No one made that for him. He did that. And I was never afraid of Abdullah again. That little thing made me go, I was like, that guy's funny. I was never afraid of Abdullah.
Oh, man, I was terrified. I mean, I grew up watching Texas wrestling.
Oh, I can imagine.
And I mean, I always saw him with Gary Hart, and he had that executioner mask they put on him. Oh, good God.
I saw stuff since then where I'm like, he's supposed to be scary. But in the back of my mind, it was always something like, that's funny. I'd look at lights and I'd laugh, and it just got me one guy that's not a failure of his character. And as we see this here, this footage, this is the scariest motherfucker on the planet.
And you're thinking after watching this stuff, it's like, I can't believe he never got a run with a Backlund or Hogan and then WWF. I'm just shocked.
Backlund is the thing that strikes me, because you get these weird opponents who tore through. You would have thought Abby would have gotten a quick MSG run.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. I mean, everyone says, during this Hogan run of fighting monsters, it seems like it would have been obvious, but I don't think they would have. Basically, it was probably the forehead.
Yeah.
They were put that on television, for the kids.
That's a good point. But then the next one was, was this the Abby and Harley? Oh, okay, the Sika one. Okay, and this Sika, they refer to him as Sika Inouye. This was actually Texas Championship Wrestling, Southwest Championship Wrestling, Joe Blanchard's promotion, and it was pretty much...
He said he was taking over all of the state.
Yeah. And it was pretty much Abby kicking the living crap out of one of those Samoans, which is big deal. And,
oh, yeah.
and he just dominated him, and you got more terrified of him, like what he just did to Sika, who probably was a previous monster of the territory.
He was part of a tag team they apparently called the Islanders.
Right.
I'm sure. I was curious about that myself, looking at the dates, because I was like, well, where else were they promoted as a big deal, or where would you just have a guy like him just get the shit kicked out of him? But they made a point that he never stopped fighting, so he got to protect himself in that way.
Right.
I would think. But holy shit, you know, JJ is in the ring.
Yeah, I love that too. Yep.
And the announcer is announcing not only on television but to the live crowd that the reason JJ's in the ring, he just wants to make sure it's perfect.
Yep.
For an athlete like Abdul. And Sika comes out, get a little like, hey, you know, come on, boom. And right off screen, you just barely see it at your periphery vision, is Abdullah comes out and just hits him over the head with something, a piece of wood. And then he's got a clock that he took off the table. He's choking with the clock. He kicks the dog shit out of Sika. The entire time, they're all like, get it back in the ring. Get it back. Like, this is ECW.
Yeah.
And, which, again, to my point, you know, they didn't invent this.
Yeah.
Lots of territories did shit like this. And finally does get him in the ring. Just beating the shit out of him. He doesn't even get, like, any hope spots whatsoever. But yeah. He just never gives up. And, in fact, the one thing they do, which I thought was neat, is Sika gets counted out.
Yeah.
And JJ is screaming, hey, that's not a guy who wants to quit. Look at him. He's still climbing in. And then he gets in and Abdullah hits the big elbow.
Yep.
And then keeps hitting the fucking elbow. But there was also a great spot on the outside where he throws Sika into the wall.
Yes.
And the wall leaves a bloody, not bloody, a sweaty face print.
Yep.
So where Sika didn't throw his hands up or anything, he put his big fucking head, big sweaty head into that wall and it left a mark. And it's like, oh shit. And they get him out of the ring. It's over. The referee has to do a three count. and they have to keep doing it because apparently Abdullah just likes to hear bells ring. And that's the way you calm down his character, apparently.
Yeah.
The only thing that can calm down his murderous rage is the ringing of the bells. Because, you know, every time a bell rings, an angel gets its wings. So I have to make bells ring. I have to make bells ring. No matter what I have to do to these people.
But it actually works for the character. Cause like,
it's amazing.
It was different. Like with Gary Hart, when he managed him, it was putting the mask back over him and calm him down.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. But the ringing of the bell, you know what? I buy into it. And, I mean, God, this is just another awesome piece of business. And I'm just hoping we get some more matches of them for the payoffs. That's what, like, me and Matt D were talking about.
With a fucking 2x4.
Yeah.
He's got that 2x4, right? And they keep making appointments. Like, man, Sika's 300 pounds. He's only, this is not anybody's just fucking up.
Yeah, he's fucking up a swell Samoan, yes.
Yeah. Oh, boy. This was so much fun.
And then we go into the Harley Race one. And that thing was absolutely incredible. The brawl? Holy shit. These guys going in the Harley Race, going toe-to-toe with Abby. And they brawl back to the back. And JJ cutting the promo afterwards or during it. And which this is where they tease the Jose Lothario match, which,
yes,
God,
yes,
if
yes.
that happened, I've got to see it. Hopefully they have it, or if it happened, if it happened, hopefully they recorded it for Houston Television. I think that could be like the greatest brawl of all time. Getting a Harley Race Abdullah the Butcher match. After seeing this, I mean, that was fucking incredible. That was like the icing on the cherry on top of everything.
Mm-hmm. We get the icing on the cherry.
Yeah, get this kick ass brawl that again makes Abby the monster that he needs to be to draw money. Harley Race looks like the man's man for standing up to him, being the world's champion.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck, this was awesome. What were your thoughts on it, man?
Well, to the Harley point, JJ is saying, look, I'm going to show you this footage right before Harley Race won the title from back from Terry Funk. He's like, so you know who Harley Race is, the recognized world champion by the National Wrestling Alliance. So, and that's another neat thing, is in all these territories, you could always, they didn't talk about the champion all the time. Every now and then, in whispered touches until he was on his way to the territory to do a couple weeks or whatever. So there was a mythology about whoever the fucking champion was, and Harley definitely had that.
Yeah.
So he's playing on that. He's like, Harley Race, let me show you this. And it's not Harley getting his ass kicked. It is Harley and Abby just throwing meat.
Yep.
And it's like I'm thinking Harley's got, you know, the blonde hair. He's not totally old yet. He's got a little bit of a gut, but that's still a young Harley Race.
Yeah.
A young, badass Harley Race. Just throwing fucking fists, you know, through that fucking crowd. You know, selling when he's like, oh, briefly on the defensive. Abby's selling too. Just an amazing fight between, you know, it's great. Yeah, Abby can fuck up anybody, but this is the world fucking champion.
Yep.
So instead of them showing that the world champion got his ass kicked, it's like, look at what he went toe to toe with Harley Race. That makes the champion even more important, number one. But it makes the challenger, Abby, even more important. But then it's this quick shot of Harley with his arm in a sling.
Yeah.
With the implication that that's how he fucked up his arm. And I'm like, how did he fuck it up? Did he break it kicking his ass?
Yeah.
Did he break his arm?
Break it over his head, yeah.
Because Harley Race was not backing down.
No, he wasn't.
From Abdullah the Butcher. Whatsoever.
No, and
that's why
this
is awesome.
Yeah, it made it, both guys got made in this brawl, you know?
They're in the lobby. They're fighting through the lobby. And they pull back, and it's this awesome shot where you could see in through where the stairs lead up, like into the lobby. There are no curtains. And you're watching the crowd run in, and the ones people go, oh, fuck it, I'll wait till they get back to the ring. But people following them through the lobby, and you see it moving. This was amazing. And we have to mention, as it starts and then finishes when JJ introduces this, the big giant picture behind JJ here is a giant wall-sized picture of Abdullah the Butcher
bloody
covered
face.
In blood.
Yes.
Covered in blood. All you see are his eyes and his mustache and a slight smile.
Yeah.
And the rest of him is red.
Crazy
and
Abby.
It's insane. And JJ's right in front of it. Like it's like the Citizen Kane poster.
You know? Yeah, it almost felt like a Natural Geographic photo or something.
of a
tribal man who bloodied up a boar. I mean, it was freaking incredible, you know?
Oh no, it's batshit. This whole thing is nuts. Nobody comes. I want this match. See this match so bad. I want to see this whole segment.
Yeah, I was looking. I think I have it on tape somewhere. I went to YouTube to look for it because I was like, I need to see this match, and it wasn't on. I couldn't find it on YouTube. So I'm gonna go look on something else later.
That's where the little bit we have here is enough for the next time I read anyone on fucking message boards or whatever, be like, Harley Race wasn't that good. Go fuck you. Fuck yourself. Number one, you haven't seen enough to really make a fucking fair judgment. Number one. Number two, look at this. Look at this 45 seconds of Harley goddamn Race throwing fucking fists with Abdul.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And Harley looked great, I think, here in the Houston footage.
Oh, goddamn. Yeah.
Like that Wahoo match and that third fall of the Terry Funk match. I wish we could get more of it.
More Harley at this age.
That's what the Harley was with the Wahoo. I think it was 78.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Same with the Fair Funk one. But damn, I mean, this is.
I want brawling. I want more than brawling, Harley.
I agree. This was so epic, and all it was vignettes and promos and angles, and it really got my juices flowing for some Abdullah. I mean, which is exactly what you want to do, and it's kind of like you really miss territorial wrestling in a way, because you can't have characters like this, especially now, not in the PG age either. But But, you know, but that's what makes why you're able to territory. That's why you miss territory wrestling, because you could he drew money, but he couldn't draw money. He couldn't draw it for 5 years in a territory.
I was just thinking about this, Pete, the other night. Same question. It's not impossible because Umaga worked.
Umaga worked. I agree.
Umaga worked. I mean, in this day and age, you're going to have to really be very sparse about that, and you better make sure you get someone as good as Umaga was to do that fucking. Cause remember when that gimmick happened? Everyone was always like, "Yeah, they wanted it for Samoa Joe, but they got some like guy who he's not as good," and that was all bullshit anyway. That dude, Umaga was awesome, or else that gimmick would have been dead in the goddamn water.
When you think about it, he was part of the Inouye family, so
exactly.
We just watched that Bula just fucking guzzle.
I mean. Everyone first shit on that, and everyone remembers it fondly.
Yeah, everyone does remember it fondly. You're absolutely right, and you are right. Everyone did shit all over it. Like, who was this guy? Freaking crazy.
At first, you know, and then it was amazing.
But we've also seen it like we're working in reverse. Like when they had Tenzai, they try to do it similar in a way, but as a Japanese guy,
and there was never any fear about him.
Yeah,
you know. The whole idea of, and again, in this day and age, it's something that's ethnic, that has fear involved in it. It's just, it's things you may not want to be getting into, and I understand it. So it's a very hard, the whole monster thing is hard. I think they've got it with Braun Strowman is the closest they can do right now.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, Braun is probably the closest, but they're not. Braun reminds me more of like a Terry Gordy type of...
Right, I'm saying in this day and age, the whole like, oh my God, here's a scary monster.
It's hard.
It's hard. It's really hard to do.
Because how bad kayfabe is, not protected and stuff.
Yeah, but also, you also don't have a guy who has fucking four giant weird scars in his head.
Yeah. And then, you know, and then they take wrestling totally, you know, again, wrestling's different too much. Now it's a lot more about high spots and
I just want to mention this about Abdullah. I'm sorry, we'll move on. And we're talking about how good he was. We saw those first 3 minutes when he was younger, Dave said. It always gets under my skin when people who – I've read this too. Really, you know, I really got into Abdullah at first. You know, when I first started watching Japanese wrestling, there was a lot of Abdullah and stuff. And when I look back now and realize Abdullah – fuck you. Abdullah the Butcher, I think, is one of the greatest professional wrestlers who ever lived. Because of the name, the reputation, and the character, and everything. To me, what's more memorable? I don't care about anything else about except memorability and a character that you believed in. And I could honestly, I'll honestly say, if you at one point were never actually legitimately scared of Abdullah the Butcher, you're a liar.
Yeah.
I was
terrified of him.
Everybody was. And if you just watch some old footage now, if he doesn't make you just a little like, oh, he's a little creepy.
Yeah.
You did. And that means that's how effectual that character was and that performer was. So that's why I think Abdullah's one of the greatest of all time.
Oh, I'm with you, man. I'm with you. And do you have any, like memories of Abdullah that really just stood out to you as a fan? Because I know you're more of a, you know, the Northeast type of guy. Well, I was more of the Southern wrestling guy, so...
That's to my story, is he, to me, he was a legend, less than someone I got to ever see on television. He was a magazine guy, you know. Because it was not just the actor mags, there was the other ones, Wrestling All Stars.
Yeah.
And they were far more known for their photographs than they were for the stories. What they were. Well, those are the ones that listed four world champions. They included Carlos Colon as a world champion in those magazines.
Okay.
Had tons of bloody Carlos Colon.
Oh, yeah.
And Dula. So he's a legend to me. So as far as, like, stuff watching where it really like was like, ooh, I think it was WCW of all things, I guess would be it when 92.
Okay.
When he attacks Sting out of the fucking box and shit.
Yeah,
and
I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, with Cactus, because I was in the Cactus. I was kind of watching that then. probably my favorite, like, on TV shit was the shit with him and Cactus. As far as, like, growing up as a fan, since then, I can say this footage we just watched.
Yeah, I thought this was incredible. I mean, for me, my first taste of it was watching him and Brody brawl in Texas. But the thing I just remember, I don't know where it came from. I mean, it just felt like I was watching it in the middle of the night, and I was just getting, like, this Puerto Rico footage. And it was, I mean, it was just him and all these different brawls and interviews, and he's all bloody, and it was a lot of stuff with him and Carlos Colon. It might have been one of the local promotions doing something about a memorial. It might have been, maybe I was living in St. Louis at the, no, that's, that the time frame doesn't match. Because I was out of St. Louis in the 80s, early 80s, before Brody died. I was thinking maybe they were doing a Brody, Bruiser Brody respective. But I just remember one time turning on some channel, and all of a sudden, it was, maybe it was some Spanish channel I got back in the day, and I happened to catch on a good moment. It was Abdullah in bloody brawls with Carlos Colon and Bruiser Brody, and as a kid, you believed in it, watching that stuff, though, all the blood.
Well, I just realized, I mentioned it, the first time I saw him wrestle was on the Lords of the Ring. Tape, because it showed the last couple minutes of him Cologne from Starrcade, the first Starrcade. And even then, I was like, ooh. You know?
Yeah.
And even that was as limited as of a match that was, even just the couple of minutes I saw, I was like, oh, no, this is pretty cool. I like this guy.
But yeah, he was definitely a magazine legend. I mean, one of the guys that sold a shit bun of blood equals money, baby, and green blood equals green, and sure hell, men in wrestling, and men in the magazine too.
You have a generation of children who this used to be a thing, kids. Go to the magazine rack and see what's out there. And yeah, there was magazines for adults, but there was and there was the comic book rack over there. It said, "Hey, kids, comics." But on the racks for kids, you had Famous Monsters, you had wrestling magazines, UFO stories, and shit like that. So anything that was really bizarre, there was nothing more bizarre than Abdullah the Butcher blankly staring through a mask of blood going over the top of Dusty or whoever. You're like, what the fuck is this? I'm buying that.
Yeah, they drew a lot of money against each other. Good God. All right. We're going to take a break. And man, goddamn, we got to get some Abby up in here more often.
Good me, brother.
Yeah. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous vintage vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with The Sports Lounge, The TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island in Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your...
PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as pro wrestling only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
And we are back, and we're going to look at the main event of Wahoo McDaniel versus Gorgeous Gary Young, pre-gorgeous at this point in time, from January 2nd, 1981. Now, you might not know this. Do you know what's significant about this date on Houston Wrestling, January 2nd, 1981?
January 2nd, 1981, was that the day where the illegal collaboration between the Reagan incoming administration and the Iranians released the hostages?
No. And if it did, I don't know. But I know my wrestling history. And it's an important date here in Houston wrestling because of this is the actual show where they broke off from the Fritz's booking office and aligned itself with Joe Blanchard's Southwest Championship Wrestling office. So this is where talent totally changed, and Wahoo McDaniel was the booker. And here we have him on his opening show. And he's working.
I read about that in Gary Hart's book.
Yeah, okay, so there we go. And this is with Gary Young as his opponent. And for an undercard match, I thought this was actually really fun stuff. You know, Young's always been a guy who's bounced around. I mean, you've seen him in World Class, and we've seen him in Continental, and we've seen him in Mid-South and in Houston. Memphis, I believe. I mean, I think the guy's been all over the freaking place. And always been a real solid journeyman, Southern-type worker. Never really wowed you or anything, but you know he's one of those guys who knew his craft. And, and I thought he was really fun here. I thought he was really good in like the cat and mouse stick, as in he's the mouse running away from the cat. I like that they have two rings to play with, so it gives Young another tool to run away and hide from Wahoo. And then they did this like hand raising stick, which I really liked. I really liked the hijinks there. And but freaking A, Wahoo's, you know, we have all this shtick, and then Wahoo's real. And Wahoo's overhead chop is absolutely wicked. And then his finishing chop to finish Young off was absolutely murderous. And I just like the dichotomy between the shtick worker and Wahoo McDaniel, who wants you to believe wrestling's real, especially when he's wrestling. And I thought this was just a really fun match that really showcased Young really well in a really good light. And I think maybe him knowing, hey, it's the new booking office, I'm working with the booker, let me show him what I can do. You could tell Young was definitely showcasing, working his ass off, looking for a job and trying to make Wahoo look good. And Wahoo, you know, through his pendant, really, you know, all he did was do a headlock or two and then threw a couple of vicious chops in, and the crowd loved it. What were your thoughts here?
Well, I didn't know about the whole changeover, and now Wahoo's the booker. And in that case, that's why Gary Young sold the final chop and the pinfall like somebody had literally put an axe in the middle of his head, but he could still flop around. Because, then why that happened. This starts with number one, first about Gorgeous Gary Young. He's another guy. We mentioned this the last show, talking about DJ Peterson, a guy who was good enough to make a living at it.
Yep,
was never going to be a star. Good. Now I think he's far better than DJ Peterson. But it's.
But he didn't have the look that Peterson had either, though.
No, yeah, exactly. You know, which he made up for with this weird, which I always loved, and in this match he really does it. His lumbering dullard style.
Yeah,
and that's not. He wasn't doing that because he's non-athletic. That was all completely on purpose. That was his act. So when he is lumbering in or doing anything lumbering, that's not that, he's not an athlete. No, that's his performance style on purpose, which I appreciate that sort of thing.
Yes.
But this all starts out with the birthday announcements from all the kids there. Yeah, whose birthday was from Paul Bosch. He explained that two boys who had the same last name and had the same age are twins, which was great. these are twins. I don't know if they're fraternal or identical, but they're twins and they're here, and we're happy to. And he keeps getting into this, and it's totally fine. He goes, okay. He, in the nicest way, he says, enough of this birthday shit. There's a match to call. He's like, oh, we got lost up in the birthday. Hoo na na. And when he talks about music, because it was a double ring battle royal night, and instead of the camera shot being one on the left and one on the right, one was in the foreground and one was in the background.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, for a one camera shot, every time it pulled into the closer ring, it pulled back and it was in there, and it pulled into the far ring, pulled in, and that shot was perfect. When the ropes didn't seem like there were suddenly six ropes to look through.
Yeah.
That it was a really, really good cameraman working on that. I really like that. But Paul said whether or not it's allowed to do this in a match, he's like, look, I don't know the etiquette. The etiquette, not the rules.
Yeah.
The etiquette of this kind of a thing, because they don't happen very often, which is then him putting over that what he's presenting is not something that happens all the time. And so you better come, if you didn't see it, you better get down here next time. Then he calls Wahoo. And this is why I love Paul Bosch so much, is that he covers everything he says, whether or not it makes any sense. It's why he's become my saint. I have a picture of Paul Bosch above the entrance to my doorway now, because I love to do this too. And he does it on his live TV. He calls Wahoo, Chief Wahoo McDaniel, realizes, instead of just let it go. No. Because he realizes people know he's not a real chief. Let me explain this. Because we call him a chief because, of course, in the Native American world, a chief is a chief, but chief means top man. And in this wrestling business, we all know that Wahoo McDaniel is a top man. And we call him chief because of that. That's why he's called the chief. That's an honor from those of us who know him in this wrestling business. And my jaw dropped. I was like, that's fucking amazing. No one's ever bothered to go into that sort of detail.
Yeah.
Just for a throwaway thing. I'm like, I appreciate that. It's amazing. He just did it off the top of his fucking head.
And it's actually perfect for like a squash match too.
Yeah, it's great. It's the kind of stuff you fill up the time with. Yeah, and by the way, your referee jacked up Luis Guzman. Holy shit. Yes, the arm raising thing. And the arm raising thing you mentioned.
Juan Reynoso to the rest of the world, or to the rest of Texas.
I was going to say Luis Guzman, because I've seen him on Boogie Nights. Or
Code Black now that's the show he's on.
Yeah, sure. I was like, let's go for a good movie. Yeah, anyway.
No. Or your dated reference, but go on.
Like your forgotten Boogie Nights.
I know. And,
anyway.
Mark Wahlberg.
Wahoo chops him in the corner, and he comes out and says he should be disqualified because that hurt. And that really fucking hurt. And he's raising his arm, the referee pulls his arm down, and he immediately raises up his other arm. And they do this back and forth for maybe 15 seconds, and it's funny as fuck. They don't overdo it. It's a perfect time thing. Wahoo's just like, bam, another chop, slap. After he hits him with them all, we get another great Paul Bosch doing some alliteration. Because there was a combination of clouts that Gary Young will never forget. And I was like, he's in fucking Howard Cosell territory at this point. And then to finish, the greatest call I've heard in I can't even imagine how long. is at one point after Gary Young is in the turnbuckle after a while, he was kicked the shit out of him, and he does the whole offer the handshake deal. And Wahoo, you know, won't take it. And Paul Bosch, instead of just saying, "Hey, you can't fool Wahoo like that," no, he takes the time to make a statement. And he goes, "Well, you can't blame a man like Wahoo for not accepting that, you know, Wahoo, as an Indian, has the right not to trust the white man." And I fell to my knees and proclaimed Paul Bosch the greatest commentator of all goddamn time. No one's ever said that. No one's ever said that.
And he's probably shooting on all the other wrestling promoters out there.
I don't know. I don't care. All I know is I heard that. It was, number one, completely out of place.
Right.
The reason the Wahoo wasn't going to shake his hand is because he's like, "Oh, do you have smallpox in that handshake?" No. You know, "Oh, are you going to break a treaty?" No, it's because Wahoo's a smart professional wrestler. He got that in there because he wanted to explain why a hero, like your new booker, Wahoo McDaniel, wouldn't shake a man's hand is because of the way the Indians were treated by the white man. And it's such an incredible choice to make on your live television show, and that you don't give a shit because you're Paul motherfucking Bosch. I laughed so hard, but at the same time, I'm like, that's great. It's really good. I love this. Loved it. And it was all about Paul Bosch. I mean, yeah. Gary Young was fun. Wahoo. Oh, my God, those chops.
Yeah.
This was all, for me, about Paul Bosch being awesome.
Yeah, I don't want to say Wahoo's been a revelation, because Wahoo's always been good from what I've seen. But it's it's really good to see 1970s stuff from Wahoo or early 80s. That match with Harley Race is really a... I mean, I saw over at Death Valley Driver, Phil, they're redoing Match of the Years for all the years, and then right now they have that Wahoo, versus Harley Race match as their best match in 1978, and it deserved, because me and you went bananas.
Here's the thing about Wahoo. We had a handful of stuff that we go, oh, that was amazingly some of his last stuff he ever did in the AWA, where we're like, oh, look at that. A lot of the Crockett stuff that we saw was like,
He
was at the end of his career.
Yeah.
And he had this last-minute resurgence in the AWA. But none of us ever wanted to believe that, maybe Wahoo kind of sucked, and it was just one of those things that old guys say.
Yeah.
Because there was something about him we all liked, and the fact that all these other guys we respected, guys our age, let me put it this way, people our age, respect when they go, like, if it's Harley or Flair or the Funks or whoever, and they go, fucking Wahoo McDaniel was the man.
Yeah.
We tend to go, well, I'm not going to argue with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're seeing it in this footage. I'm like, oh, and he's old here. I can only imagine how amazing he was as a young guy.
You'll probably also love it. Phil Schneider, they ranked their best match from 1980 right now. It's right now sitting at number one for him is... it's the Ivan Putski Larry Zbyszko match. They just watched it for the first time like a couple weeks ago, and it's funny because I first mentioned it like 2 years ago, and Phil's like, "I gotta see this. There's no freaking way."
Dude, everyone shit. Dude, here's the thing about that. Okay, for those of you who listen to the show and haven't heard Titans of Wrestling, this was a match: Ivan Putski versus Larry Zbyszko from the Philadelphia Spectrum, 1980. That we watched in our project that we do, that blew our minds, and we're like, "Holy shit! People need to see this." And it was like, and people were really like, "No, we're not going to watch that. You guys are high. I don't know, whatever." We're like, "You need to see this. Trust us." And no, that's good to hear. The match is fantastic.
Yeah, so that's working. They're working number one right now in 1980. I love it. Yeah, but hey, Johnny, got anything to plug?
Let's see. What do I? Oh, yes, I do have something to plug. It's another podcast. It's not a wrestling podcast. It's not something on our network, but I'm hooked. And they're coming back with new ones in 2 weeks. It's a podcast called Crime Town that is made by the people who did The Jinx on HBO. And it's where they're each season is focusing on one city and its major crime story. And this is Providence, Rhode Island in the 70s and 80s. And the crime family that ran things there, and the mayor who was there to fight them but becomes corrupt. And it's the best thing I've heard in forever. I cannot recommend it enough.
Okay, that's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's great.
All right, man. Also, Bruce Tharp has opened up a YouTube channel. He's uploading little like clips and interviews and stuff from the footage. So I'll put that again in the show notes. Also, if you guys have a Roku and you're upset they don't have a Roku app, download the Tubio app on your iPhone or your Android, and it will cast the thing, and you'll be able to watch it straight on your Roku. So that's partly a solution. And like I said last week, my buddy, our old school Carl, puts it over. I'm using it. I love it. And finally, man, if you want to just dip your toe in the water, NWAOnDemand.com. You get it. You can get a free week, a trial week free. I mean, what more can you want? I mean, they have also can go over to Pro Wrestling Only. I mean, they must have 350 mm-hmm. to 400 matches up there now loaded. I mean, I didn't have it counted, so but it was up to date as of yesterday for that I did it. So I mean, there's a insane amount of matches here on NWAOnDemand.com. It's $8.99 a month. You get the first week trial week free. I mean, really, I can't put this footage, and this service over enough, because it's heaven to old school wrestling fans,
and it's fun to see
yeah.
what pops up. And a lot of us are like, oh, they haven't had like an epic great main event style match in a while. Okay. Here's the thing. For me, I'm like, I don't give a shit. You know what I like.
I want to see a little bit of everything, because I want to get the feel for Houston
wrestling. Right, so. And I'm even more so of that. I want more of that than anything else. And that's just me, and I know I'm in the minority. But again, you know it's coming.
Yeah. they uploaded two matches. We didn't. We usually go from Saturday to Saturday, they uploaded two matches tonight.
I knew about the Tiger Conway Jr. and Ricky Morton versus the Grapplers,
which sounds exciting. You know, they go 29 minutes, and then we have a Lalani Kai, young Lalani Kai match, where she goes, it goes 10 minutes. So, we'll be talking about those next week. So, hey guys, check it out. Give it time. If you like this podcast, we're not paid by the NWA, or we're not
yet.
We don't get any kickbacks. We pay for the service. It's just two guys talking about something they really enjoy. So I mean, if we enjoy it, maybe you might enjoy it. I mean, but the worst case scenario, check it out. Have fun for at least a week.
No, I'm just gonna put it out there, Pete. If you think you're a wrestling fan and you don't enjoy this, you're not a wrestling fan, and you should give it up and find another hobby, because I have no time for you. None.
Or there's none. All right, man. We'll see you guys next week. And have a good one. Have a strong kicking off of the new year.
Happy New Year.
I remember way back when. Back in the days when I was young, I'm not a kid anymore. But some days I sit and wish I was a kid again. Back in the days when I was young, I'm not a kid anymore. But some days I sit and wish I was a kid. And everybody say, I remember way back when. And everybody say, I remember way back when. What? Back in the days when I was young, I'm not a kid anymore. But some days I sit and